Well, good morning and welcome, KRFY listeners, to a Tuesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show. And I'm here with my best and most familiar co-host, Julie Perchinsky. Hi, Julie.
Good morning, Julie.
It's good to see you. And we're being rejoined by a guest that was on our show fairly recently, but today for an entirely different reason. But we're still going to go ahead and start her out with the old topic.
That's right.
Amy Midstock, hello.
Hi, ladies.
Nice to see you again. The last time that we spoke, you were about to embark on quite an adventure, a long, long swim into the night in the deep waters of Lake Pendre, and swim yourselves, you and your friend Lindsay, swimming all the way up to City Beach. Well, that's happened. Why don't we start by asking you to tell us a bit about it?
Yeah, we did not get eaten by the Pendre paddler.
Good. Not even nibbled on.
Not even nibbled on, yeah. I think we had a sighting at some point in the night. I had a really surprisingly good time. I didn't think, perhaps because I was so negative about the experience and the training of it, that I was really a bit of a Debbie Downer for, you know, 8 months, that maybe my attitude was so bad that the expectations so low that the experience was actually really joyful. And so the swim went great. We had an incredible crew. Lindsay launched off the docks in Bayview with a pretty awesome sprint and cannonball and swam in record speed. She's such a powerful swimmer. And we started at 6 p.m. I took the 8 to 10 p.m. shift so that I could swim into the dark and not be scared of the dark. I didn't want to just get off the boat in the middle of the night and be paddling because I had no idea, like, will I see my hands? Will I see creatures? Will fish come to the lights on me? And it was actually really, really magical. And the water was calm at night. And I rolled over on my back and looked at the stars, and the Milky Way was visible out there. And it was pretty amazing. This lake that we have is such a gift. And all the ways in which we can participate in lake life is pretty wonderful. So I don't know that I would do that one again. The wind kicked up in the morning. We had to motor around a point because our safety guy pulled us from the water. I was swimming and I thought I was doing fine, but they told me I wasn't going anywhere. So no. You don't really know though when you're just sucking water.
That's right.
That's right. Yeah. But you all completed it.
We completed it. We even had time to stop and have lunch at Bottle Bay Marina. We motored over to the marina and had burgers and fries and then tried to squeeze back into our wetsuits. And arrived at the city beach with a bunch of people and had a rainbow flag towed behind us. And then there were a ton of families and people on the beach cheering. It was just lovely. It was a really great community event to be a part of.
Yeah, and the Pride weekend itself went well, it sounds
like. Yeah, Pride weekend was great. We had this amazing artist, Grace Love from Seattle, came. Oh, she had pipes. That girl could sing. And then we had the Shook Twins. They always grace us with their presence. And they're just, you know, a beloved here of Sandpoint. And I loved how many children and families came. And I love how, like, all the silver streakers of Sandpoint show up with their lawn chairs for the drag show. And it gives me faith in our pioneers of aging. They're still hip.
Yeah, good. high point, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Well, it's nice that we can have this follow-up because oftentimes, Julie, you and I have the interview before an event and then we don't really hear about how
That's
things
right.
went. Appreciate that. Well, Amy, today we're putting you in the hot seat because you are usually a person who might interview or research or do an article. And so we are going to ask you the questions today.
And I'm here for it.
I hope you're ready. I hope you're ready to roll here.
I'm ready. Okay. You know, one time I was doing an interview on stage and the first question from the audience that they brought to me was like, how is your relationship with your father now? Oh. And I was like, whoa, who let that lady talk to me? Like,
darn it.
Can we start a little lighter? But you guys can ask anything. I'm pretty much an open book.
Well, that wasn't on my outline list, but I may add that now for the very end. Anyway.
He was a safety kayaker for me this last week.
Okay, cool. Well, okay, Amy. We know you because you write in both our local and our local venues, the Reader at times. I think the spoke the bee at times, and you're on staff at the Spokesman. So you write a lot of stuff, and you're also an author. And we'll ask you about your publications at some point a little later on. But I think what I'd like to start with is, how did you come to be such an outdoors enthusiast? Where did that come from? Tell us a bit about your background, how you came to be here in Sandpoint.
My parents, like many of ours, moved here from California in 1985. And I was first outdoorsy, not by choice, because my bedroom was a tent in the summertime. And we just lived in the backwoods on Gold Hill, off-grid. We were homeschooled kids with bare feet and dirty bodies and thrift store clothes and food stamps for a lot of years. So we were outside kids. I never went to like national parks. Like my list of national parks that I have been to is embarrassingly low. But when you grow up in the woods and you literally your life is camping, that is not exciting. What's exciting is going someplace where you have better than 40 watt light bulbs that are connected to a car battery.
Right.
Yeah. So I didn't think I would go back and be a forest person. It sort of surprised me, because as an adolescent, all I wanted to do was get to the city in the real world, which I did do. And then I came back. So I lived in Europe for a lot of my adult life and became a parent and a wife there. And then I became not a wife and I came back to Idaho to raise my kid.
Well, you're saying that you kind of grew up in a wild situation and then you went away from it and you came back. What was the enticing, what made you interested in coming back to outdoors activities in this area?
Yeah, you know, I hadn't been outdoorsy in my young adult life. I was living in Europe and smoking Gauloises cigarettes, as you do, and living on baguette and German bakeries. I was pretty unhealthy and probably pretty unwell. So just generally coping with some of the less colorful parts of my life. And I was really obese. So I was smoking, I was obese, I was definitely depressed, though I wouldn't have known to diagnose that or get help for it. And my dad was here and he had called me like around Christmas time in Germany, or I was calling home. I was living in Germany at the time near Frankfurt. And he asked me if I wanted to do that summer triathlon that they had out at Green Bay, or not Green Bay, Garfield Bay, that Lake DeForest triathlon. And I was like, Dad, I can't even get up the stairs without, you know, losing half a lung right now. And, but something in me decided I should try it. So I went to a German gym, you know, like our YMCA. And I asked this German lady, I said, I want to do a triathlon. And she looked at me. She did that like look from the feet to the top of your head and then back down real slow and was like, we have a lot of work to do. And I just did whatever she told me. And then I came and I did that little triathlon. And it was such an incredibly rewarding experience for me to be back in my body that I quit smoking and I took up mountain biking and trail running. And then I just did more and more and more.
Yeah, because there's a lot more to you than those two activities. You get out and try just about everything now.
Yeah, I have like sports ADD. So I'll try just about anything. I don't like jump out of airplanes. I'm not an adrenaline person. I'm an endurance person. So I try, you know, it's really embarrassing in Idaho to say you don't have a downhill like winter sport, but I really don't. I tried to learn how to snowboard this last couple of years and that was best for me, but still like the speed and the
You're not a speed no. demon. You're more of a get her done kind of.
And get her done. And I'm really not challenge. A very coordinated person.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's, I definitely am this like short, stocky Norwegian pack mule. So whatever sports are good for that, that's a good one for me.
You know, that reminds me of something that my mother, now long deceased, said to me and actually my sister at the same time. And she said, you know, girls, the Calamines, We're workhorses. We're not racehorses. So just get used to it. Yeah. And I've never forgotten that. And I'm still a little mad about that. But I think she was right. How about you, Jules? You guys heard from...
Oh, yes. We weren't racehorses.
You're the workhorse.
Absolutely.
You got to capitalize on what you have. Maybe we could be Clydesdales. Right. They're still very magical. Right.
Morgans.
Right. Yeah. There you go. Those big, strong necks. That's right. Anyway. No, it's funny, though, isn't it? Everyone kind of finds their place where they excel or where they enjoy getting out doing things. And it's good to know what that is.
Yeah. It is good. And up here in Idaho, we have so many options. But really, I think just about any of your sports are available, whether you're horseback riding or a kayaker or a skier. We have a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've written about a lot of things that you've tried. Why don't you name off a few?
Oh, God. The ones that I never want to try again?
Start with them.
Today is apparently the one-year anniversary of Lindsay and I doing the Lion's Head Traverse, which is how I got suckered into doing the swim. And that is definitely a thing that, like, once you've done it, you can be like, oh, I don't have to do that again. We called it type 4 fun, which we discovered out there. And that is a really, really it's rugged terrain. It's a terrible bushwhack. We got rained on. It's steep. You get cliffed out. That is, it's memorable because it's beautiful. The Selkirk Mountains are so remarkable and such... such beautiful landscapes, and the granite's very dramatic, but the traversing it is definitely some of the most challenging terrain that I've been on. And other things that I have written about that have been really like memorable for me would be a run I did across the Isle of Skye in Scotland. I was traveling with my husband, and I just told him to drop me off, and I had brought my grandmother with me in a Ziploc bag.
Oh,
this is how she travels these days. I can rattle her little ashes and those little tiny bone shards and take her all over to the places that she would have wanted to go. And she loved Scotland and always reminded me that I was Scottish because I identify as Norwegian. And so I took her because I was going to leave some of her in Scotland. And before I went, I did my genetic testing and discovered that we are not Scottish.
Oh, my goodness.
And so there I was with Granny trying to be like, all right, if you want to be Scottish, we're going to make you Scottish now. And it was just a fantastic, fantastic day. Crazy wind the whole time. What the Scottish would call, you know, a wee breeze. nearly blowing me off the mountain. And it's so old and like Paleolithic. There are actually dinosaur footprints still fossilized in the shorelines. And you can feel it. You feel like a brontosaurus is going to come up at any minute and just like chew on some seaweed in front of you. And it felt really connected to me. So I kind of wonder, I think I love going to places where we feel connected. Maybe we don't really understand. Maybe it's something, I don't know, witchy and ancestral about us. But Scotland was a place that I've returned to and always feel really at home. And, you know, I've done some cool stuff. Like I've been to the Himalayas. I've been to Patagonia, typically in the context of writing, which is also a gift. But still, North Idaho is where I want to live.
It has landscape features that remind us of many places on Earth that are pretty special.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is really something else. I found North Idaho after having traveled to New Zealand, and parts of New Zealand remind me of many parts of North Idaho. It's pretty neat.
That's so interesting, Julie. My dad just bike-packed the North Island in New Zealand for 6 weeks or something.
Cool.
And he got back and said, I'm never flying again. Everything they have, we have too. Which may or may not be totally true, but he just felt like we have such diverse landscapes here available to us.
For sure. But they're very nice people. The New Zealand folks are very nice. Well, Julie and I are hearing you narrating, and I hope you'll tell us about a few more favorite experiences, and then I want to move on to how you came to be a writer in addition to I hear your narrative style. It's very wonderful and fun, and that must have been what drew you to writing, but let's first hear a few more high points in the adventure world.
In the adventure world?
Yes.
You know, My dad always tells me it's not an adventure until things don't go as planned, right? And you're like, here's what we think we're going to do, mm-hmm. and here's what we actually end up doing. One time I was in Patagonia chasing expedition racers as a journalist, and I really was underskilled for the task that they gave me. So it's a 10-day race, the Patagonia Expedition Race, and they send teams of four out, and those teams split all the equipment in their four packs, and they go for as fast as they can through the landscape. They kayak sections, they bike sections, and they bushwhack sections. And anything that is off road or off the water, there's no trail and maybe no humans been there, and the maps are very poor. We're talking about places down south of Punta Arenas on the Tierra del Fuego in the Darwinian Range. And you can see the glaciers that are feeding the river that you have to cross. And I went and I was chasing, because I accessed the place by vehicle, I was up early with the first leading team, and they were quite fast, even though they had been racing already for 24 hours and I had probably slept most of the night. And I went out after them, but I had a much heavier pack because I had to be self-sustaining. And I had a very tiny stove and espresso machine, which at some point, not a machine, but like one of those little mocha pots. And at some point they stopped to sleep just briefly. They really only sleep like 40 minutes at a time. And I said, do you guys want coffee? And they were like, hearty, har, har, that's really funny. And I was like, no, really. I have coffee. So I unpacked my little camp stove and they thought I was a god. Like, they're out in the middle of Patagonia drinking espresso. But I needed to keep up with them because I realized pretty quickly that as we got out there, I very much did not have the navigation skills to figure out how to get anywhere else. And it's so rugged and so far away from, there's like one road across Tierra del Fuego, and there's not going to be a rescue. So I did have a satellite phone, but those don't always work great. It's certainly not at that time. And my challenge was just to keep up with this incredible team of athletes that were moving faster than I had ever moved through the night, through the mountains, not stopping. And wondering, like, are you guys just chewing caffeine pills? Like, how do they do this? So that was probably one of the trickiest things where I was in a sticky situation. And thankfully, obviously, I'm still here.
You live to tell the tale.
I live to tell the tale. And I did have to swim a river that was really unsafe. And that was part of why I don't like cold water. And part of this swim was, like, can I get back into appreciating cold water without being terrified of it? And I think I could, I am. I think it was sort of healing that way for me.
Yeah, good news. That sounds like an amazing adventure. So you have any number of adventures such as this one that you've written about, and folks can go to Spokane Spokesman or they can look you up. What is your, if they wanted to look for your articles, where would they find them?
You know, I've been a columnist for the Spokesman Review, so I'm not on staff there. I'm a freelance writer, but I've been a columnist for them for, God, I think over 10 years now. And I write for the outdoors section. Mm-hmm. And occasionally I'll do a feature story about something else. So the Spokesman, of course, we want to support journalism.
For sure.
From time to time, I write something for the Reader. And occasionally you'll find me in the Bee. I used to write in the Bee a bit more. I had a column there for a while. And then you can find my book. We were sort of talking about my current book that's out. You can find, I think, at Outdoor Experience and, of course, Sandpoint Books in town or online. The publisher is Leita Books, Leita Like the Creek.
Mm-hmm. And sure. And what is the title?
That one's called All the Things. And it's, I think there's a tagline. I should know the name of my book. All the Things, Mountain, Misadventure, Relationshiping, and Other Hazards of an Off-Grid Life. And that's about, it's a collection of essays about buying this unfinished straw bale cabin up on Renko that was off-grid, and being a single mom out there and like felling my own trees, fighting with vermin a lot, trying to garden and trying to be a mom. And
Yeah, living that life. That's that's an exciting way to go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you were familiar with it having grown up that way.
Yeah, my parents didn't have YouTube. They had like Mother Earth News magazine and 5 Acres to Independence, right?
Right, oh, right. Boy,
that's right. So, of course, you have written that book. And is there another book either in the works or another published book?
Yeah, there's another book coming out next year. I don't know the title yet. And it is, it's a memoir piece. And it talks about my childhood up on Gold Hill from the age of about 6 to 16. And that'll be forthcoming in 2027, which is exciting.
Well, it's obvious that you have a humorous style, Amy, and I'm just wondering, how did you develop that? Like, what made you decide that writing was going to be something that would interest you? We've heard about what your early life was and then your time in Europe, and when did the bug to begin writing about your life and adventures kick in for you?
That question has a couple of different answers. So when I go through, like, my Rolodex memory of when it was being homeschooled, We got, like, as punishment before we had to be hard labor, we got sentences. And so I remember getting in trouble once enough that I had 100 sentences, the same thing over and over. It was something like, I will not go sledding when I'm supposed to babysit.
Oh.
And, you know, if the snow comes and you're 7, your priorities change. So I joke that sentences as punishment started my writing career. I had always been a reader from a very young age and a writer from a young age, and I still have collections of letters that I wrote when I was just writing. You know, at 7, I was writing letters to friends and telling everybody who I was going to be when I grew up. And then when I was probably around 4th grade, somebody gave me a typewriter, and I have. Still, I have journals dating back from 1987.
Oh, my goodness.
And they are horrifying.
It's tough to look back at things we've written when we were much younger. Good for you.
Yeah.
So you saved that.
I think I just was always a writer and always knew that that would be my path in some way, shape, or form. But it hasn't been my career until, you know, the last 4 years. It's been what I've done solely.
Well, you have a very individual point of view in your writing, and I'm just wondering, is there like a little mission or a goal? Is there some message that you're hoping you can get out to folks, or you just enjoy doing what you're doing? Tell us about kind of your perspective and your...
In my writing, like what I write about?
Yeah, and why, and to whom? Who do you consider your audience?
Yeah, anyone willing to buy my books? You know, it's interesting because a lot of my audience are older because they're newspaper subscribers. Some of my audience are people who are outdoorsy or definitely the off-grid livers. Were interested in my previous book, and my column used to be called Off the Grid, but now I built a new house that has electricity. So I had to change my column name, and I didn't tell them. All I told them was, we have to change my column name, you guys, because it's like, I feel like I'm being disingenuous saying Off the Grid. And I never named it. They just do their thing over at the paper. And one day I looked up one of my columns because I don't subscribe to my own newspaper. I know, isn't that embarrassing? I try to stick to my 10 articles. They had named my column In Her Opinion. And I was like, oh, no, you don't. That is so demeaning. I called them right away, my editor, and I was like, what are you guys doing? Columns In Her Opinion. Nobody takes that serious. And so now I don't have a column name, so I don't know who it attracts. The outdoor readers. I think, you know, Julie, the message in a lot of my writing, obviously I'm a conservationist, and so I talk a lot about nature and my concerns about climate change. I do definitely use a lot of humor to approach things, and I joke that I make a living on self-deprecation. My childhood really required a lot of humor, and I can see in my journals this plucky child who just sort of bumbled along and got over the things that happened, and I'm really, really grateful for that. And sometimes I think there's know, maybe there's a little too much of that in my writing sometimes, where I gloss over something that should be heavier. And I think as I age and grow, I'm more courageous about talking about more about the raw things that happen.
Yeah,
and
rather than maybe a tongue-in-cheek reference.
Yeah.
Actually kind of jumping into it a little bit more.
Yeah, like a little less cute, a little mm-hmm. more real. And it's been amazing. Like one of the most painful stories I wrote a few years ago, I had a miscarriage and I was really, really sad about it. And I had just written about and announced that I was carrying. Which I had discovered while climbing a volcano, which maybe that's why I had a miscarriage. Who knows? And then I was miscarrying, and I just asked, can I write about this? It doesn't seem like something that's really commonly spoken of so openly. And it was really powerful for me as a writer. It was powerful for me as a, you know, as a woman who needed some healing, but also the responses from readers talking about their own journeys. And I think that is probably like when I think about the message of my writing, it's really humanizing the things that we're experiencing and letting people know that we're not alone in that experience, whether it's the air quality that is making us sad or some personal experience that we've had, or our dysfunctional families, or our aging bodies, like whatever it is. I like to write about my husband a lot, my poor husband. Oh, I make fun of him a lot.
Poor guy.
I know. And he'll say something and then I'll be like, what did you just say? And he'll go, oh God, you're going to write about that, aren't you? And I'm like, you know how it goes. I told you when we got married, I'm a writer. So I think I try to connect people through my writing and connect people to themselves and to each other. And that's what I hope that people walk away with, is like a little bit of a chuckle and some grace.
What a nice purpose for your writing. And, you know, you touched on changes in environment, and I'm sure that influences your outdoor activities at times, and maybe drawing that connection in a personal way. I don't know. Is that something that you find yourself thinking about more these days, environmental change as it relates to everything you do? Does that enter in?
Well, on a day like today when we have smoke, definitely. A few years ago when I went to go scout the Lion's Head route, I came up the backside of Lion's Head and something had caught fire and the smoke settled on us while we were on the top of Lion's Head and we couldn't see anything. We couldn't even see through the woods. And I remember coming back down from this horrible climb and bushwhack, and even the nature that we came across, the deer, were clearly unsettled by the level of smoke and the sky. Everything had turned red, you know, when it's just so mm-hmm. thick, and it was a fresh and nearby fire. And I cried my whole way home. And I wrote about that. Like, you know, we have all this beauty around us, and sometimes we can, especially up here, and especially like this year has been really a gentle year mm-hmm. for weather for us. And it's easy to forget that this is happening around us. But it is. It very much is. And that climate grief is a real thing. There's like support groups now, and climate grief psychology is a thing. And I'm glad that we're being able to talk about it, because I do think it's going to impact our mental health, especially those of us who are so connected to nature.
Yeah, I mean, there's a real sadness when you see the smoke show up, or just day after day of heat. We look back at our earlier times in life when things weren't like this, and it takes quite a bit of adjustment, doesn't it?
Yeah, when the growing season was 2 months.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's worth writing about for sure. No matter what way we talk about it or think about it, it's an important topic and close to your heart, I would think, based on what you do, what your
yeah.
life is.
And I think for us too, and that's a piece that I try to bring in, lest we, you know, I don't want to be single-handedly responsible for everyone's seasonal depression. Yeah, but I do try to find hope again and look at like the resilience of nature. There's a stretch of highway down on Highway 97 coming out of Biggs towards Bend. And they rebuilt the road some years ago and made it wider and the slope a little more gentle. And it kind of follows the old road up this canyon, but every once in a while it diverges from the old road, which is this narrow two-lane track below. And I don't think it was that long ago that they did it, maybe 20 years ago or something. And nature is like overrunning and consuming the old concrete. You'll see just a little strip of the yellow lines, but the grass and the wildflowers and the soil are just taking it over. And I think, oh, the earth's going to be fine when we're gone.
That's so horrifying and also inspiring at the same time.
I know it's. I know I said that was hopeful, but I guess I might be Team Planet.
There you go. That's right. Well, maybe you could share with us if you have any other. Do you have anything big, anything exciting on the horizon? Any new adventures that you're planning?
Oh, good Lord, woman, no. I'm not even over last week's adventure. I go through this phase of, post-race blues that professional athletes have. I am not a professional athlete, but I still get the endorphin addiction. And afterwards, you sort of have this like, yay, I didn't die. I survived the thing. And then you're like, oh, I'm just going to rest. And really, it's not a lot of days before I start going, well, what am I going to sign up for next? And this year, I really am trying to not do that, partly because I'm burning the candle at both ends on a manuscript. So I need to, like, it's a smoky day, and I'll be like, oh, good, I guess I can't go outside, and yeah. I just have to sit here and tip-tap away on my typewriter.
Yeah, some good incentive to stick with the project.
Yeah, so that's my primary adventure. I have a writing retreat here in Sandpoint in October that I'm really excited about and still can host. We can talk about that later as well. And then I abandon everything and go to Greece for about 5 weeks at the end of kind of the end of the year, mid-October until late November. And I hide out in a little cottage in the mountains and a little cottage on the Mediterranean where I just sit and write. And that tends to be, it's less adventurous. I always find trouble to get into for sure because there are mountains.
I was going to say you must have some things that you're planning to do other than just sitting behind a laptop and writing. There have got to be some little adventures planned.
Oh, yeah. Greece is also a very diverse country to play in. And I have friends there who are particularly excited to have somebody as dumb as I am show up with outdoor gear. And I'm always trying to find trails that they haven't discovered yet and be like, well, have you done this? Or some version. Last year, we had found this canyon that they have that is kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel for world records, but it's like the longest, narrowest canyon with the most left turns or something. And it is very, very deep, deeper than the Grand Canyon. And very, very narrow in some places. It's like 30 feet wide. It's marvelous. And it's sort of an ecological wonderland because there are many places there that never see sun, where plants grow that don't grow anywhere else. It's called the Vicos Gorge. And there used to be a whole medicine practice based on the plants in this gorge, but that medicine practice is lost. Those doctors held it very close and protected it, and then they died out. And so there's museums there about that. Well, we I discovered that this canyon is there and actually has a trail in it, and they had never done it. So one day I made them run the canyon with me, and then it turns out the Pindus Mountains are above the canyon. And so last year I decided I wanted to see if I could get from the deepest point in the canyon to the highest point of the Pindus Mountains in the same day, to which my friends said, we'll drop you off and pick you up. And they did. And it was like almost a 9,000 foot day of
yikes
of elevation. And there was nobody out there. I saw some wild, I don't know, the Greek mountain goats. They're like ours, but they're brown. And a lot of wind in my ears. It was amazing. So there's always something to find. And late in the season, there aren't very many people. And there are in the Peloponnese, where I also go, there's some really great canyons there, too, that you can wander. You just have to be careful because they don't have search and rescue.
Mm-hmm. It's not like park rangers are running around to scoop you up and find you.
Now, these adventures, do you decide to write about them? Are you, or is someone assigning you or giving you ideas, or how do you come up with all these adventures?
Right. Basically, I need to figure out how to make my entire life tax deductible. That is my strategy. Occasionally the paper will tell me like, hey, we heard this thing is happening in your area. Do you want to write a story about it? Or I will say a thing is happening and I'd like to write a different kind of story about it. Like I'm going to work on one about our waterways. We have the water path that KLT is doing in collaboration with other organizations. So I'm going to research and write a story about that. I'm really excited about. But most of the time I am just mining my life. And if I go to a place, I think like, what are all the things that I can do to write about? And sometimes it is, you know, learning how to distill Tsipero or getting lost in Italy somewhere. And other times it's really about the people. So, you know, when you're a writer and you love people like I do, anything is a
all
story.
Material.
Yeah, it, yeah, it really is. If people are comfortable with it, otherwise you have to change your names. Yeah, so I think I kind of navigate life like that. Like, oh, there's a story in here. And sometimes it's a single line or a person you see at the grocery store and you're like, oh, there's a character. And you build from there.
Especially in Sandpoint. Boy, my grocery store experiences have really been something. I had one yesterday. I'm not going to share it till we get off air.
It all depends on where you shop.
Yes, I was going to say. Very
there's true. Like a different demographic at every store.
So true. So true. Amy, this was a question that one of my friends wanted for me to ask you, and that is, of course, you were interested in writing and grew into it, but were there any mentors or anyone who inspired you to do what you're doing today, or did you just kind of come upon it in your own style and time and place?
You know, as I said earlier, like I read a lot. I don't have a memory of like reading and thinking, I want to write like this person. Like I definitely read Little House on the Prairie long into my life. I remember in high school saying I wanted to do Little House on the Prairie as my book report, and my freshman teacher said, that's too young of reading material for you. And I was like, she is legend. How dare you say
that's
that?
So true.
Laura Ingalls Wilder is like, I don't see you writing a bunch of books.
Yeah. That's funny.
And yeah. And so I think one thing that really helped me in my life was going to public school, transitioning from home to public school, where like education and my teachers, I loved it. I ate it up. I had teachers that had profound impacts on my life. Don Moore, who retired a few years ago, was my first public school teacher and changed my life. There's like a whole chapter in my book about him. I don't think he knows that, but Don, it's coming for you. And so a lot of my mentorship came through being acknowledged as a creative through the school process and connecting to adults and teachers who saw my writing and also just saw me, I think, saw me. And in college, I remember I was, I dropped out of high school when I was 16 and I got my GED and I went to college instead. And I wasn't probably built for staying in that institution that long. I think I was a little bit of a free spirit, a lot of a pothead, and college seemed like a better place for me. and it used my mind. And I remember in my English class being like, oh, I'm a writer. I'm gonna write this essay and it's gonna be so impressive. And I kept getting like B's and C's on my writing.
Why do you think? Did they tell you why? They must have.
Because it wasn't very good. My professor was from Purdue, which he told us a lot.
Oh, okay.
So maybe his standards were high. And then one day I wrote an essay about having taken my car to the mechanic and how I was trying to ask what was wrong with my car and that mechanics don't actually use real words. They just grunt. And when you're like, well, how much is it going to cost? And they're like, ugh. And you're like, well, what's wrong? Well, and this like awkward conversation that I was trying, I was a poor college student. Like, am I going to be able to drive this vehicle? What is the problem? How long will it take? And in the whole thing, I never got any answer from it. So the essay was about that, and then hoping that something was going to work when I got my car back and was driving it. And then my car was making sounds like the mechanic. And I got an A on that essay. And I think that at that moment, I realized that voice, like the voice and the humor and just telling the story and finding the gold within people and within interactions really is where the meat of something is. And
that little nugget, finding whatever is the either the emotional or humorous, the finding the heart of the experience.
And your voice. Yes. It really is a voice that writers have that they, that they write from.
Their unique voice.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's right, Julie.
I think that's true. And this speaking the for me, a lot of like as a censored kid, like a lot of being able to say like, this is the story and here it is and take what you want. And yes, it's my story. So there's going to be some different perspectives, but having success and recognition and being able to relate through the world with an uncensored version of my life. I mean, we censor it a little bit because I'm not allowed to swear.
Yeah, but to have the confidence to know your own voice and then go ahead and run with that.
Yeah, I think that's the challenge for most writers. So that was a long answer to, like, did I have a mentor? I never got to have a writing mentor, and I still am always seeking writing mentors. And I have this, like, fawn reaction to academia. So I don't have an MFA. I did go to college and I got some degrees, but not in writing. Mm-hmm. And so whenever I meet like English professors or literature professors, I always am just sort of like, hey, do you want me to be somebody who fawns over you and gives you my work and you'll read it and say good things about me? And I still haven't found a lot of professors who will say not good things about me. I had one a while ago send a piece of work back to me after like 5 minutes, and it was a very dear to my heart essay about bathing a woman in it's her final bath in life. And actually, in the end, we realize she's not even with us anymore. It's her final bath. And this was a true story. So it was really close to my heart. And he emailed it right back to me and said, ugh, I can't even get through this because there's so many adverbs. Get rid of all of those. And adverbs and modifiers, he said, adverbs and modifiers, like, get rid of them and then send it back. You're wasting my time and yours. And after I cried, I wrote him back and said, what the expletive is a modifier? Because that's how, like, untrained I am. Right. And I'm like, are all mentor people sort of like divas? And no, just some of them are probably on the spectrum.
Well, what about who are your favorite authors? I mean, obviously Laura Ingalls Wilder, but who do you look to, you know, to learn from?
You know, I'll read almost anything except for like romance fiction, which I think is the only thing that sells right now. People are eating that stuff up because they just want to check out a reality, right? That's sure. The antidote to climate depression
is just reading sexy romance stories.
Sexy romance stories.
It's not, bodice rippers.
Yeah, yeah. The planet's still going to be on fire when you finish that in 4 hours, okay? I love classics. So I definitely am a big Steinbeck fan. I love Hemingway. I tend to look towards prize winners and try to... It's hard because I start a book out as... like a work, you know, I'm looking at like, oh, how are they doing the language? And I know it's really good when I forget that part. I also love Cormac McCarthy, but I don't read scary things. I can only read like the Border trilogy over and over.
Yeah, yeah.
And just imagine that the other stuff is good. And lately, I've read some really beautiful work this year. I keep track of every book that I read, and I'm a slow reader. But I read Tim O'Brien's book, The Things They Carried, at the suggestion of Stacey over at Sandpoint Books. She's a great, if you don't know that about her, she's a great book recommender.
Yeah, good to know.
Shout out
to Stacey at the library.
Not the library, at Sandpoint Books.
Oh, at Books. Sorry.
Yeah, the library will know to too.
Oh, yes. Those girls, those people know everything.
Yeah, and what's coming out. So that, and I just finished yesterday reading We Survived the Night by a native man named Julian Brave Noisecat, who just finished making a Oscar-nominated movie, a documentary called Sugar Cane, about the Sugar Cane Reservation up in Canada, in BC, Canada. I think it's BC, Canada. And he wrote this book about, really, about colonialism and what it has done transgenerationally to the natives and who they have become, you know, as their cultures were wiped out and their languages were wiped out and their parents were traumatized and then were having children that they didn't know how to raise. It's a remarkable and sad book, but beautifully written with humor and love and interwoven with Coyote people's stories. It was really artfully done.
Sounds good. I'm going to give a shout out to Louise Erdrich. If nobody's, she's kind of a Minnesota writer, but I think her work would come home here too. And I don't know that many people in Sandpoint that have read her, but she'll get me going when it comes to interesting Native stories. Anyway, well, you've mentioned that you don't have a particular mentor, but have you been able to be a mentor for anyone here in town? Is there anyone who looks to you and asks for advice?
Surprisingly, people ask me for advice, but not on modifiers.
or adverbs.
Right, because I don't know what those are.
The LY or you know words. Too well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, tell us about your writing course that you have coming up. Maybe that's the place to go with who you are mentoring.
Right. So I love this idea of mentorship relationship. I think is very important in society, and that we don't see it very much in our day to day, but how I think it's really important to take what we have, whatever it is, and pass it on to someone, and that relationship is also kind of sacred, but it's not monetary, right? It needs to be like, I am giving this to you because people have given it to me, and I believe in what you're going to contribute to the world. So I do have mentees. And I don't say who they are because that's private, but it's an honor to work with budding writers. And I do also do developmental editing, so people can hire me to help them work through a project. I don't line edit because modifiers and commas are still an enigma to me. But the shape of a story, how to really take care of our characters with compassion, particularly when we write like memoir, how do we present these difficult stories out of love? And ensure that we've had enough therapy before we go upon that adventure. And then I teach writing retreats. I guide writing retreats a couple of times a year. So last year it was in Greece, which was part of why I was there, and how to make it tax deductible.
Wow,
and I've always wanted to bring one to Sandpoint. And so I'm really excited that this year we get to have one here. And it will be at Talus Rock from October 5th to 11th. So there's two options. There's the whole week-long retreat for people, and it's really available for locals in that sense, so that you don't have to pay for lodging or all the food. You can just pay for the teaching for the week. And then there's a Saturday workshop series on just the Saturday, which I think must be the 10th. And that is also open to everyone. And we have songwriting workshops. We have with Chris Parody, who's also been on the radio. He's my banjo teacher and just an incredible musician here.
Oh, I need to get his number.
Okay.
I haven't quite given up on the banjo yet. It's close.
Do not. He has gotten me farther than I could have ever hoped to be. And then we have, you know, Kelly Price is teaching an art and words class. I'm teaching workshops. We have a poetry teacher from Spokane coming, who's amazing. So that's just an all-day event that anybody can come and participate and just pick which items that they want to do. And you can find that at SelkirkMountainRetreat.com is the website for that. Or if you're on my website, amymidstock.com, which is harder to spell, believe it or not, then you can find links to the retreat. And we have some really great teachers there, and I'm just honored to be a part of that.
Well, a lot to look forward then for you for the fall, coming into summer and fall for what's going on with you, Amy. It may not be a grand adventure, but it's going to be a pretty exciting time, it sounds like. Yeah. It brings me to what maybe will be one of our last questions for this interview, but You know, it seems to me that it takes quite a bit of courage to launch off into some of the adventures that you've gone ahead and done, not knowing anything about them. And writing itself requires courage and kind of that sense that you're just going to go ahead and jump in. And where do you think that comes from in you?
Naivety. But, you know, I have alluded to some of the challenges of my childhood. I had an abusive childhood and with a lot of different kinds of abuse in there. And I have worked my whole life to be able to find my voice and be okay with my voice and to state what I believe is truth. Like, my truth is this. And it has not come without high cost. To do those things, you know, when you have a truth sayer and a family dynamic, it usually comes with some losses and some challenges. But what I have received on the other side of those things has outweighed what I've had to lose in order to have voice and have that courage. And I would say, like, I say a lot that the colors are brighter and the food tastes better on the other side of those things. And I think when we find our voice or we find our courage to step into something that may seem scary for us, and we do the thing, the affirmation and the unknown that awaits for us is usually pretty welcoming and remarkable. And things that we can't even imagine are on the other side of that. And, I haven't seen myself so much as a courageous person as I have seen myself as an optimist, that I don't tend to think about, like, the worst thing that can happen. I'm more like, wow, what's the worst that can happen?
That is actually my way of looking at stuff, too. I'll sit and think, what is the worst thing that could happen? And then decide if it's time to go ahead anyway.
Yeah.
It seems to work for me. And it sounds like it does for you, too.
And I don't know where that comes from. Like, how do we get to be born optimists? I mean, many people with circumstances similar to mine didn't have the same outcome. So whatever blessings were bestowed upon me, that I get to come out of that as this, the word I used earlier was plucky. Like, that really defines this little kid. And it still kind of defines how I go about things in life. And, like, oh, well, almost, you know, I almost lost my foot, but I didn't. And, you know, those things.
So that's good.
Yeah. Right. So that's good. And so I think that part of the sustainability of that has been that the outcome has always been okay. And even when it wasn't, we just work for another different outcome that we want. And I wish that for everyone. I know I make it sound so light and easy, and I know it's not. But I would say, like, just keep doing the thing. Imagine doing the thing and having done it, and then go that way.
And who wants to live a life where you haven't tried mm-hmm. the stuff that's interesting or exciting for you? So kudos to you, Amy Midstock.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Julie.
It's important to challenge yourself. I think that's probably your overview of your life is just accepting the challenge.
Yeah, that's, you know, I like that, Julie. It's accepting the challenge, and also just, like, I'm really curious. So I often go and go, like, can I do this? Can I get to the top of this thing? And I always wonder, like, what does the world look like from the top of this thing? What do I learn about myself when I look back at how I got to that place? And the same is true for writing. When you're writing a piece that's maybe difficult, like maybe an emotionally difficult piece, memoir will always be like that. And then looking back, I'm like, what did I learn about myself or others or my judgments in that process? That ability to reflect, you can only do if you move forward.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, wow. This time together has gone so quickly, and we're just about out of time.
Can you believe it? Yes, we are. I can't believe it.
No, it goes quickly.
It's been a fantastic talk.
Mm-hmm. And inspiring. Amy Midstock, yes. I just want to thank you for spending some time with the two Julies. And why don't you remind the listeners of how they can find you?
You can find me at thespokesmanreview.com and, or I think it's probably spokesman.com. And then, of course, this fall at the Selkirk Mountain Retreat.com or amymidstock.com. And, you know, It's a small town. You can say hi if you see me at Winter Ridge.
And the bookstore and the library.
Bookstore, the library.
Yes. Online, I'm sure there's sales.
Outdoor experience. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Outdoor experience.
And those folks will know you, but for the listeners, the few one or two listeners that don't know who you are, the spelling is a little unusual. A-M-M-I and then mid, M-I-D-S-T-O.
K-K-E,
Midstock.
Yeah, so. It's a Hebrew-Norwegian combination there.
There you go.
That's a longer story, different day.
Well, once again, I just want to thank you for joining us. It's gotten me inspired to get out and do something new.
Yes, and to show your love of the outdoors by being out there.
Yep, getting out there.
That's for sure.
Thank you, ladies. It's been a joy.